Hello, and welcome to Light the Way with Dr. Colin Monger. He's the senior pastor of Shepherd of the Hills Calvary Chapel. At Light the Way, we believe the most powerful tool we possess when sharing our faith with others is the Word of God. It was the Apostle Paul that said, "Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of Christ." So as we open the Word together, it's our prayer that you'll not only receive what God has for you, but share what you learn with those you come in contact with. And now, here's Pastor Colin.
If I could invite you to turn into your Bibles to the book of Matthew chapter 20. The book of Matthew chapter 20. You know, I mean this when I say that we as a church are blessed. And I don't say that just as a platitude. We are legitimately blessed. We have so many great people here who help and give sometimes every week, sometimes for years and decades on end. We have people who serve faithfully. They come in after work. They attend meetings. They help with the property. They help with the building. They help with the kids. They help with the music. They help with just about anything and everything that needs to be done here at the church is done by wonderful volunteers. And we have so many of them. It is a blessing. In fact, statistically, we're above average. I want you to know that. Most churches our size see between 10 and 15% of their people volunteering. We estimate we're between 30 and 40, which is really good. I mean, we still have people that certainly, we could encourage to serve, but we're doing really, really well. And I want you to know that your service and your sacrifice and your hours and your years of help are seen and they are appreciated. And just in case you haven't heard it in a while, I want to say thank you. And I mean that, thank you, from the bottom of my heart and from all the leaders and all the pastors, all the staff here. Nothing here could happen without volunteers. Last week, we were at our pastor's conference. We do this every single year. There were 1,600 of us, actually, this year, which is really encouraging to see. But all men, all brothers in the Lord, and we're all there. We're all serving in ministry in some capacity. Those are the churches in Calvary Chapel that go from Maryland to Maine. So that's not all of them, but there were 1,600 of us there for 3 days. And you put that many pastors together, and eventually what you end up with is people kind of talking about the churches and their ministries and what's going on. And I really felt like the Apostle Paul in 2 Thessalonians, where he says, "We spoke proudly about you among the churches for your perseverance and your faith." And I can relate to that. I really can, because I see it, and you all do a great job. A couple of weeks ago after church, we were here. Everybody had gone. And there was a couple that was here, and they help weekly taking out trash and doing things after everybody had gone. And I just stopped them in the hall, and I said, "You know, thank you for what you're doing. I really appreciate it. We really do. It means a lot." And without hesitation, he looked at me, and he said, "I'm blessed to serve." He didn't say, "You're welcome." He didn't say, "I don't mind." He said, "I'm blessed to serve." I will tell you, that really humbled me, because how often do we describe service as a blessing versus how often does it become kind of a chore, an obligation? How often do we take an opportunity to serve and we treat it like an obligation? It's something that we do when nothing else comes up, but then when we have a conflict, we get out of it, we find someone to cover us. It's easy to forget that serving is a blessing, in that God could do all of this by himself. He could do it by his very thoughts. You remember in the book of Genesis, it says that God said, "Let there be," and then there was. And so, yes, God could do all of this by himself. He could do it through a spoken word. He could do it with a snap of a finger. He could do it with just a thought in his mind, and it would be perfect and flawless. And yet, he includes us. He uses us. He empowers us so that every one of us has something to offer in service. One of the things that we like to tell people who are facing some kind of crisis, and it doesn't matter what crisis it is, it could be job-related or money-related, it could be health-related, it could be the loss of a loved one, it could be some injury or tragedy that they've personally suffered. It really doesn't matter what it is. One of the things I encourage them to do is to help someone, to serve someone. It's amazing how being reminded that we have something to offer can help. And so for this reason, this morning, I want to talk about being blessed to serve. Because we are blessed to serve. But when we forget that, service becomes more of a sentence than it does a blessing. We turn the joy into jealousy. We become like the workers in our passage before us. Notice what it says in Matthew 20, verse 1. For the kingdom of heaven is like a master of a house who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And going out about the third hour, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace and said to them, "You go into the vineyard too, and whatever is right I will give to you." So they went, going out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour, he did the same. And about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing and said to them, "Why do you stand here idle all day?" They said to him, "Because no one has hired us." He said to them, "You go into the vineyard too." And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the laborers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last up to the first." And when those hired about the 11th hour came, each of them received a denarius. Now, when those hired first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received a denarius. And on receiving it, they grumbled at the master of the house, saying, "These last worked only 1 hour, and you've made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat." But he replied to one of them, "Friend, I'm doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last worker as I gave to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or do you begrudge my generosity?" So the first will be last, and the last will be first. Did you know that according to leading research, 67% of people in America say they are more productive at work when they are happy? There was an article that was written by the Harvard Business Review, and it says, and I quote, "One of the most robust findings in the economics of happiness is that unemployment is destructive to people's well-being. We find this true around the world. The unemployed evaluate the quality of their lives much more highly, on average, as compared to the unemployed. Individuals who are unemployed also report around 30% more negative emotional experiences in their day-to-day lives." The fact is, we as people were created to work. In the book of Genesis, it says that God put man in the garden to work it. It wasn't until sin entered the world that work became hard, and that's when God said, "By the sweat of your brow you will eat your bread." But up to that point, work was never a burden. It was always considered a blessing. And so this morning, that's what I want to talk about, being blessed in our service. And there's five things to keep in mind regarding this, as we see in our passage. And the first is, remember this. When it comes to service, you were selected. You were selected. Notice how each time the master of the house went out, he chose someone different. In the morning, he went out and chose a group. At the third hour, he went out and chose a group. At the sixth hour, he went out and chose a group. At the ninth and at the 11th hour, he went out and chose a group of people. And he even speaks to one of the workers who is standing around at the end of the day. And back in verse 7, he wonders what's going on, and he says, "Why do you stand here idle all day?" In verse 7, they say, "Because no one has hired us." And so the master says, "Okay, then you go into the vineyard too." The point is, the master hand-selected every worker. That means he chose them personally. And for you listening to this today, he has chosen you personally. You know what Jesus says in John 15? You didn't choose me, he says, but I chose you, and I appointed you so that you would bear fruit. And what's more is the Bible tells us that when he chose you, he called you by name. Maybe right now you're frustrated with where you are. Maybe it's not where you thought you would be. Maybe life hasn't gone according to plan. And you're at the point right now where you're considering giving up. You're going to quit trying to reconcile with that person. Maybe you're going to stop the treatment because it's just too difficult. You're going to resign from work. You know, you're not the first person to deal with this. It really is true. In the book of Esther, Queen Esther dealt with very much the same thing in a different way. You remember the story. Esther was a Jewish woman. She married the king. The king was not a Jewish man. And the law of the land said that if anyone, including the queen, were to barge into the king's chambers and speak with him without an invitation and he was unhappy, the law said that person had to be put to death. And so Queen Esther usually just kind of kept her distance and didn't go near her husband during the day. But then one day she learns of this evil plot by a man named Haman, one of the king's trusted advisors. And his idea was he was going to exterminate all the Jews. He was going to kill them all. He had these big nooses built. He was going to hang them one by one, almost like an ancient version of Adolf Hitler. He was going to eradicate the Jewish race from the world. And so Esther's faced with this real dilemma. She's the only one in a position where she has the king's ear in a way that he'll actually listen and give her audience. But there is that pesky law. What if she barges in and he's in the middle of something? And however important it is that she tell him about this plot against the Jews, the king is upset and she's hauled away before she can deliver the message. What then? And so she wonders, should I quit? Should I walk away? Well, one of her trusted advisors comes to her and says, maybe you were made queen for such a time as this. The point is, God could have chosen anyone. But he chose Esther. And likewise in your life, God could have chosen anyone, but he didn't. He chose you, and he gave the work to you, and he entrusted you with the task. And so he selected you personally, but he also selected you specifically. Notice in our passage how each time the master of the house goes out to choose, he chooses someone different. He doesn't call them all at once. Some he calls early on in the morning. Some he calls later in the day. And some he calls at the very end of the 11th hour. But he calls them at different times specifically. And who knows why? It doesn't tell us why he chose the ones that he did. But maybe he knew certain people just could endure more. Maybe some of them didn't have the stamina. Maybe some were already beaten down because of life circumstances, and he knew that they didn't have as much to give, and so he brings them in at a later time in the day. The Bible says that God is faithful. He won't give you more than you can handle, and so maybe the people he calls later couldn't take any more than that. But he calls them personally, and he calls them specifically. And the same is true for your life and me and my life. You are not where you are today because of random chance. I hope you know that. You're not here. You're not where you are because one day you happen to wake up and run into an old friend, because one day you answered a lucky call, or because one day there was a knock at the door, the phone rang, or you opened a letter. God called you personally, but he also called you specifically. And he has a plan for your life. And all of those chance encounters and all those phone calls and knocks at the door, all of the gifts and all of the abilities and all of the desire have all been brought to bear to put you right where you are today. And so God has chosen you. He has selected you. The next thing I want you to remember is to evaluate things properly. Evaluate things properly. Notice what it says going back to verse 10. Now when those hired first came. They thought they would receive more, but each of them also received a denarius. And on receiving it, they grumbled at the master of the house, saying, "These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the heat of the day and the scorching heat." Notice when the first call goes out, when they first talk to the master, when he goes out and he hires the first batch of workers, and they agree to a denarius. They like the reward. It even says back in verse 2, after agreeing with the laborers. So they sit down there at the table. They have the conversation. Okay, this is what I want you to do. How much do you want for it? There's the back and forth. And they walk away with an agreement. I'll pay you a denarius for all of the work. And then later on in verse 13, Jesus even mentions that the master replies to one of them, "Did you not agree to that?" And as long as they looked at things with their focus being on pleasing their master, they were fine. But notice how the moment they started comparing themselves to others, the moment they became preoccupied with what other people had, as soon as they evaluated their situation according to worldly standards, well, you see what happens. It says they started to grumble. And what should have been enjoyed as a blessing through their hands became bitterness in their hearts. And the same thing will happen in our lives if we let it, when we're more focused on what others have than what God has called us to do, when we start comparing ourselves to other people, when you measure your success by theirs, it will always lead to bitterness. Always lead to jealousy and resentment, because everywhere you go, someone will have something you don't. You know, I've noticed in life, poor people want more money. I've met a number of very wealthy people. You know what they want? More simplicity. It's the way it goes. I've been a part of very small churches and very big churches. You know, small churches always want to be big. You know what big churches want? They want to have that feel of a small church. Obscure people want to be popular. You know what famous people want? Privacy. The point is, there is no joy in comparing yourself against what other people are or look like or have. The only thing you need to measure yourself against is how faithfully are you doing what the master has called you to do. Listen to what the Apostle Paul told Timothy. Be sober-minded, endure suffering, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry, he says. Are you doing that? Are you fulfilling your ministry? Are you doing what the master has called you to do? Or are you looking at other people, like the workers in our passage here in verse 12, saying, they only worked 1 hour, and you've made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat? And so remember that you were selected. Evaluate things properly. Third, rest in the assurance. These workers are so focused on what they think isn't fair that they have missed the biggest part of the blessing. And that is the assurance of knowing they're going to get paid. Because they know no matter what happens during that day, no matter how easy it is or how hard it is at times, no matter if they fail, no matter how much they may struggle, at the end of the day, there is a reward with their name on it. And sure, the people who came in at the 11th hour, they weren't there as long. They didn't work as much. They didn't go through as many hardships. But you know, for the whole day, they didn't even know if they would be picked. It's in their own words in verse 7. Why are you idle all day? Verse 6, verse 7, because no one has hired us. Is it true that some people come into the faith at the end of their life? Absolutely. Is it true that God accepts those people as he does the person who came in very early in their life? The thief on the cross tells us it is. At the very moment of death, he confesses the Lord, and Jesus says, "You will be with me in paradise." So absolutely, God receives a deathbed confession. And is it true that those people go to heaven just like lifetime believers? Absolutely. But it's also true that that person has spent 50 or 60 or 70 years wondering if they will be hired. Am I going to have a place? What happens when I die? Whereas the lifelong believer knows their whole life that at the end of the day, no matter how hard it may get and how many times I may fail, there is a reward with my name written on it. Back in October, we took the kids on vacation and we went down to Disney. We went to Florida to visit some family. We were going to visit the Disney park, and this was their trip. I know some people go every year. We do not, but the kids wanted to go. And specifically, the girls wanted to see the princesses, and the boys wanted to see Star Wars. And so the girls wanted, you know, the love and the kissing and the smooching, and the boys wanted to blow stuff up. And those are not at the same park, by the way. And so my wife and I actually were blessed to visit there when we were honeymooning back in 2007. And so we kind of had an idea of the way it was. You had to buy a ticket. When he got there, you gave him the ticket and you walked in the park. But now it is actually different. And we didn't know this, but you have to make a reservation ahead of time. If you're planning a trip, you're going there. If you don't know that, you need to do those things. You get online, you secure your spot. We had no idea. So the night or two before we were about to leave, I got online to just buy the tickets so that we'd have them when we got to the theme parks that week. And sure enough, it said you have to make a reservation. Oh, and by the way, there are no availabilities during the time you'll be here. It got to the point I was so upset, I told my wife, we're not even going to go. I'm not going to take them to Florida and have them not do that. We're not going to go to the other parks and just say, hey, you almost had Disney. I mean, that just wouldn't go very well. I said, we'll go later, but we're canceling this trip. And she said, no, let's go. Let's talk to my aunt. You know, she's a planner. Maybe she has an idea. We'll just go. And so we started driving. We were half the way to Florida when my wife's phone rings, and it is her aunt on the other line. And she says, look, I don't know what to say. We didn't know we had to make reservations, and we're not going to be able to get in. And she said, I did that weeks ago. Your tickets are here. You have a place. Did we get into that park the way other people who planned had? Sure. But I would have loved to have not had that anxiety. You know, I could have done without those gray hairs I sprouted that night. I don't know about you. I don't want to live my whole life wondering what's going to happen when I get there. Have I done enough? Have I planned enough? Have I been good enough? Will I be called or not? And the sooner I can secure my spot, the better. And so rest in the assurance that no matter what, there is a reward with your name waiting on it. Fourth, share in the victory. Here's the thing. God has called you, and he could have done all of this by himself. I mentioned earlier in Genesis, it says God said, let there be, and then there was. You know what it follows at the end of every day of creation? And it was good, and it was good, and it was good. And then finally, God says, let us create man in our image. And so he does. And at the end of all of it, he said, it was very good. What God does is good, and it's perfect, and it's pure. You contrast that with Isaiah 46, even the good deeds of people are like filthy rags. In the book of Romans, he says, no one does good. The point I'm making is God could do all of this stuff, and he could do it better. He's more effective. He's more efficient. Whatever he does is perfect. But despite all of that, he brings us into the mix. He could save people. Through sovereign decree, just walk around tapping them on the shoulder, and you're saved, and you're saved, and you're saved, and you're saved. But you know what the Bible says about salvation? It says faith comes by hearing the word of Christ. Oh, and by the way, Jesus says, you're going to preach that word. Go into the whole world and tell people who I am. God could be his own witness. He could tell people who he is. He could tell them about heaven. He could say, look, I made the whole thing. I can tell you every square inch of it. But instead, in the book of Acts, Jesus says, you will be my witnesses. Paul says, you are ambassadors for Christ. God could do it all himself, and it would be done better, and it would be done perfect, but instead he chooses to include us through service. It's kind of like if you've ever cooked with kids, trying to crack an egg. You ever tried to do that? I hope you have some spares. Okay, crack the egg. Okay, no. All right, no, get another one. All right, gently this time. Okay, nope, you dropped. Okay, get another one. All right, we'll do it over the bowl. Okay, all right, get all the shells. I'll tell you what, just rinse out that bowl. We'll start over again. By the time you get like one egg you can use, you've gone through six or seven or eight or however many. But it's just like that. You know, God uses us, even though we make mistakes. He uses us to share his message, even though we forget parts of it. Even though we get parts of it wrong. Even though half the time we can't agree to what that message is, he uses us. And because of that, we share in the victory. I remember when I was working for the window and door industry, we would put windows in these multi-million-dollar homes in Albuquerque. Oh, it was such a neat thing. But every now and then we'd drive by one of those, and my wife would be in the car, and I would say, honey, look at that house. You see that house up there in the foothills, the one with the big old gated community around it? You see that one there? I put that window in. Isn't that cool? I hope it doesn't leak. We get to have a hand in building the kingdom. We have a part in the redemption of humanity. God didn't save you to sideline you. He puts you in the game. And he gives you gifts and abilities and opportunities to use those gifts and abilities. In Ephesians 2, it says we were saved and we were created in Jesus for good works. In the Old Testament, there was an offering that was collected from every person. It was the half shekel offering. It was in Exodus 30. And it says that the poor are not allowed to give less and the rich are not allowed to give more, that everyone gives a half shekel and it's used for the tent of meeting. And so there was this thing that everyone could do. It wasn't a contest to see who could write the biggest check. It wasn't so much that the poor couldn't participate. It was just the right amount so that everyone could share in the ministry. And likewise, God calls people to serve, even though he could do it better, even though he could do it faster, and it would be without any imperfection, but he includes us in some way. And so we share in the victory. And finally, enjoy the ride. Enjoy the ride. Notice what it says in verse 16, so the last will be first, and the first will be last. You know, there is a benefit to service on earth, and it is that you are part of that journey. God is in the driver's seat, and he has a plan, and we're steaming toward it. And he's working all things together for the ultimate good to accomplish that divine will. And you get to be a part of that journey. And what's more than that, you have a front row seat. And the longer you're there, the more you get to see. And so enjoy the ride. It really is true that we are blessed to serve. And I don't say that to get people to sign up for stuff. I hope you have it as an attitude of the heart that it is a blessing to serve. To do what Jesus did when he said, the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others. And then on the final night with his disciples, he says, as I have loved you, you should love one another. And what did he do? He served them. He washed their feet. He took the form of a household slave and he served them.
You've been listening to Light the Way with Dr. Colin Munger, the senior pastor of Shepherd of the Hills Calvary Chapel. If you'd like to hear this message again, stop by our website at lightthewayradio.org. Not only will you find an archive of Pastor Colin's teachings there to listen to, but there you can find out more about our ministry. Jesus said, "You are the light of the world," and we want everything we do and say to revolve around that. If you'd like to get behind what we're doing, please visit lightthewayradio.org. Thank you for listening today, and come back next week as Dr. Colin Munger once again delivers another helpful message from God's Word to help us light the way. In the meantime, remember to be a light to someone this week.